an interview with my father, Mr. William E. Taylor. This interview is for the purpose of a history course in which I have to fulfill this requirement. Mr. Taylor is presently a Sun Oil Company supervisor, and he is going to be talking a little bit about his early life when he was young. He grew up on a farm, and a little bit about the kind of conditions that went on when he was young. He was born in 1925. Okay, Mr. Taylor, tell us a little bit about your life, where you were born, and the kind of life that you had when you were young.
Well, I was born in Dallas, Texas, March 26, 1925. My dad was a streetcar operator, and a few months after I was born, we moved to Iowa, and he took up farming. And Iowa was a very small town, about 500 people.
Okay, what did y'all grow on your farm?
Well, we grew mostly cotton. That was cash crop. We raised corn, watermelon, sorghum, grain for cattle,
but was it a lot of hard work back then, work on a farm?
It was work from daylight till dark, picking cotton. I hated cotton. I always said that if I ever farmed, I wouldn't make cotton. I would do much work here.
How big was the farm that you lived on?
We had 100 acres of land. My granddaddy given each one of his children 100 acres of land and a half when they got married.
How many bedrooms were there?
We had two bedrooms. Of course, we didn't have electricity in those days. That was before REA came through. And no bathroom facilities inside the house. And we had a cistern where we got our drinking water. We had gutters on the around the roof of the house.
When y'all wanted to take a bath, did y'all have bathtubs?
We had a number 3 wash tub.
Oh,
so we had to boil the water, heat the water if it was cold. Otherwise, it was just a cold bath.
You brought the water in from outside?
Yeah, I went to the cistern and drew a bucket of water out, buckets of water.
Okay, there weren't any kind of appliances that you use. Did y'all have a washing machine?
No.
Did y'all wash y'all's clothes by hand?
We didn't have electricity. And Mother used a rug board, and she had a wash pot that she boiled clothes in. And later on, after I left home, finished high school, REA came through and they had electricity. And then she had a washing machine, a refrigerator, and some of the appliances.
Well, how did y'all keep y'all's food fresh and everything? We had a refrigerator.
Well, it had an ice wrap. It came around about 2 or 3 times a week.
Did y'all go into town very much to get supplies, or did y'all grow most of y'all's own food?
Well, we usually went to town every Saturday afternoon. Most of the people came in, and that's when they did their shopping. The roads were bad. The little town of Iowa was near the mouth of the river, and it's set back in kind of between Bryan and Madisonville and Mapsota. It was about 10 miles to a paved road. And when it rained, it was just almost impossible to get out to the highway or get to one of the largest towns. And often on Saturday, when people would go to town in the wagons, buy the groceries.
Were there any, how about the main highways back then? Were they pretty good? Were they still pretty rough like the general back roads?
Well, the paved roads were, I guess, comparable to farm to market roads. Nowadays, we live about 90 miles from Houston, and once or twice a year we go to Houston to visit relatives, and that was really considered a long trip, 90 miles from Houston. That would be possible to say a 500 mile trip today. Most people had Model T's, Model A's back at that time.
Were there very many automobiles on the road at this time?
Well, not compared to today. Most people had a car. I learned to drive a 1933 Ford. I got a driver's license when I was 14 years of age. 33 Ford was unusual in that the front doors opened the opposite of what they do today.
Well, did very many young people start driving at an early age, or were cars pretty well left to adults?
They were pretty well left to adults. The kids didn't have cars like they do today. High school kids down like that have automobiles. Most families then only had one car. I remember my granddad bought a new 1944 for about $900.
Okay, since you lived on a farm, there wasn't any television. There was radio, right?
We were the second family in our community to have a radio. I remember when only one other family had a radio. Of course, they operated on batteries, and we didn't have electricity. Then, of course, when I was a kid, I liked to come in after school and listen to programs like Jack Armstrong and Wilderness Road. I believe the story of that name. But most of the time, I had to go to the field to do the work. Sometimes my mother tell me that she left me to listen to radio. We have to go chickens and hogs and milk and cows and such things, bringing in firewood. We had to cut our own wood. When my mother started to prepare meals, she had to build a fire in the stove. And in the summertime, you imagine how hot it got in the kitchen. Of course, then we had to have firewood for the heaters or fireplaces in the wintertime.
Well, in the wintertime, you used wood to, you know, keep warm in the oven. What kind of heating system?
Well, we had about 20 acres of woods on that place. We'd go out and cut down trees and use cross-cut saw and take an axe and cut up the blocks and make firewood for the heater or cut it in smaller pieces for the cook stove. And mother would keep the flat irons on the stove iron clothes. Later on, she had a gasoline iron. And I thought it was pretty much like it would blow up because it would be light, and the flame would come up of it. So you got it congested, the fuel would get shit off. And eventually we got a kerosene stove, cook stove. The life was a lot different back in those days. In today's modern communication.
Well, since you didn't have TV and there wasn't, you know, the radio was the only, you know, other, the real means of entertainment. What did y'all do for entertainment? You know, to have fun.
Well, there wasn't much for the kids to do. We had no town to didn't have a dick show. During the fall, when the cotton crop came in, or the tent shows would come through, because they knew people had a little money then, and could afford to go to a movie. And I can remember seeing silent films days before the talking. The Cowboy's Daughter, like Tom Mix, Maynard and Bob Steele, and they always had a cereal before the main feature. And of course, it was a continuing feature of what you come back the next night and see the next part of it. Sometimes we'd sit in under the tent of the kids. That was always a challenge.
Well, how much did it cost to get in?
Oh, I don't recall. It wasn't much. Probably 10 or 15 cents. Because then I could take a nickel and buy a whole pack of candy, or you could buy double dip ice cream cone and take care with it, you know. And we had two or three grocery stores in the little town, and I remember going to this particular lady who worked in this one store. And you're supposed to get candy kisses that come wrapped and fall on five for a penny. But she'd just reach in the jar and give me a handful for a penny. So it was a nickel. I'd get a zigzag to him, and I wouldn't let anybody wait on me with this relation, because we got to get more than 5 or 2. The people who go to town on Saturday afternoon, they weren't rushing to get a bale of cotton out of the field before night. And they'd be there grocery shopping and busy, standing around on the street corner and talk, have a good time.
Well, were there very many stores to go to, you know, buy things like clothes?
Well, I had one big general store. And I had a small bank, and the man that owned the bank owned the general store. And in this store, you get just anybody, anything you wanted, from groceries to hardware to clothing. And prices were real cheap then, but money was hard to come by. A dollar was worth something. Like I remember, good steak was 18 cents a pound. You could take a quarter and buy a mess of steak. And occasionally my grandmother gave me a dozen eggs, and I'd take them to town and sell them for 10 cents a dozen. And I felt rich with that. And there were a few colored people in the community, not many, but they weren't allowed to come into the store. They'd come to the back door of the grocery store, and somebody would come and see what they wanted and get the groceries for them, but they didn't come in the store.
Did y'all have a doctor in the town?
Yes. He wasn't much of a doctor in the old one. He died when I was young. If you were seriously ill, you had to go to Mount Soda or Brian and Massenville for the doctor. But they used a lot of home remedy there. And then run to the doctor like to do the day.
Okay, let's go back to when you were in school. How was the school back then?
Well, we only had 11 grades there. Well, you have 12 now. And we had one two-story red brick building, and all of 11 grades were in this building. The first floor was the first 6 grades, first 3 to 6 grade science laboratory. And then upstairs was the 7th through 11th grade. And my first year, or the first 3 years, I rode a horse to school. And then had a big red mare. I couldn't even reach the stirrups. In the morning, she helped me on the horse, and in the afternoon, my teacher helped me on the horse. And there'd be several of us ride horses. They wind up and have a horse race. This big red mare, she decided to run. She just ran, but she gave out because I wasn't strong enough to hold her back. go. Sometimes she'd get up the road, maybe a half mile, and she'd say she wouldn't come back home. And she'd just turn around and walk back home. My dad would give her a lick or two and start me off again. And after third grade, well, I had school buses running, but I had to walk about a mile to get to school bus. You can imagine how muddy I was when it was raining and walking in the mud to get to bus. And then eventually they changed the route for you to get in front of the house. And then morning practice, coming around the field about a half mile before it got to the house, and getting out in the road trying to get ready to catch the bus. I might be going out, putting on my belt, or tying my shoes. You know. So the bus driver was way wrong. He wasn't there to go.
Were there very many teachers in the school? I mean, there wasn't just a teacher for every subject, was there?
On the first through the sixth grade, there was one teacher for each grade. And she taught all the courses, all the different subjects. And I can remember all my teachers pretty well. Most of them were very capable teachers.
Were they strict, or how was the discipline in schools?
Well, they were very strict. They didn't hesitate to use paddles. My fifth grade teacher was a woman, and she was fairly even. She put up with a lot of it. After a while, she came to deal with. She said, they didn't know they catch your ankle, but she used a rubber hose and she put you right there in front of the class. She got me a few times. But my other teachers were strict. I knew it kind of behaved myself. Of course, at the time, too, we had different teachers. Maybe you had one teacher, but you two or three subjects with another teacher.
Were most of the teachers, were they old or young, or were there very many young teachers?
Well, we had some young teachers. As I recall, the oldest was middle age, 45, maybe 50. But there were some in their 20s. A lot of what we ate, of course. I was born in 25 and went through the Depression. But we always had plenty to eat because we raised, we had a big garden and some other canned and food. We raised and butchered out on the hog and had a smoke out. We didn't hang the hams. My dad would hang the hams. We would stuff the sausage, hang them on the rafters and smoke out. Get that smoke and cure them.
They wouldn't rot?
Oh no, they cured them. And sometimes if you use more, it should cure. The rest of the meat from the previous year that are used to do it. Injections and legal here. But you can't buy food from the grocery store like that. You know, it's much better food than what you get from the grocery store. there wasn't much for kids to do with the weather. Recreation was on Sunday, but we had to go to church. Had two Baptist churches and then back to the church.
Did very many people attend churches?
Yeah.
Five.
The church was the full. We had to go to Sunday school. My parents always forced us to go to Sunday school to church to eat this. The church was over. And then you go to the relative's house, so the relative's house, and they come to our house to Sunday dinner. And then the preacher preached until about 1 o'clock. Of course, kids would always start to stay up above the preacher and with the priest. For the day, he usually talks about 30 minutes and they talk about an hour and a half.
Where the church is pretty small,
they're small.
Were there different races? Did they all come to church? Did church or was church mainly for white people? Or did Negroes come to church? That you know.
Not in our particular community because of white people. But in a place like Houston, of course, there was discrimination. Okay.
you remember much about the facilities on a train? Like, were people pretty comfortable in the railroad line?
Well, I
remember
the safety most. I didn't have any.
They had like railroad stations or anything?
No, they had depots.
Depots.
Of course, some people would come and meet the train every day and I always did. We got on and off. I remember one man had a train every day for years. And he was looking for a wife. And basically, he married a woman. Got on.
Got older, what did you do after you graduated from high school?
When I graduated from high school in May of 1942, I started at Baylor University. In June, summer school. And World War II had just broken out.
Was that university very big?
It had probably 5 or 6 thousand students. It was very famous campus. And I had to work my way through my freshman year. I worked for a favorite police force at night from 7 to 10. And I drove a truck. Automatically got a 2-season permit to stay home and farm because it was essential for that century. went to Houston and volunteered for the Navy. Got on the train. Didn't know where we were going. I thought we'd probably go to San Diego to go to boot camps. And they would tell us where we were going. And I wound up in Corpus. Went through boot camp there. I was only there about 2 weeks, so I did transit to Guam. When I got to Guam, just about the time the war was over. I stayed there about 7.5 months. But they were building a Japanese soldier to get out of the island. And they dropped the refugees all the time until the war was over. Washed here, the water.
You came back out of service. Did you start working on an old field? You worked on a rig, didn't you?
No, I didn't start working for all kinds of stuff. I did college, and I started working for an old field. Well, before I started working, so I was kind of early, so that was over 30 years from now. And in January of 49, I started working on the auto and went to work as well. So, first night in my factory, and then first I'd never been around a small field in Grand Canada, there was no war. And I sat in that field. So I went out there and rafted about, I went to Del Mar, Louisiana, rafted about for about 4 years. It was hard work. Mountains of computer
was the what was the depression you was like? Take more than one person to, run a team. Wasn't that pretty hard work?
Oh, yes, it was hard work. It was hard to fly. My dad was fanatic about the birds and the straight. When I was 12 or 13, I guess. Well, I got behind the middle buster class at first, had a 2 meters foot. plow was like 3 feet to ground. And 13 years later, it's pretty hard to know that plow. He won't go either to the left or to the right. And my dad would get irritated because the furrows weren't straight. But I didn't have enough weight to hold that plow. I'd come in and ask you, if you had seen what made it, we chopped it cut. The first chop was, you know, and you did. Then you had to come back later on and hold it, grab it out, pull the grass out of it, and then you could, you get the cup of that. Pull dirt up to the edge, and I remember having that stew. His teacher fried me with a piece of cold cornbread and chopped onions and had to feel it with the sugar paste in there. And we're taking cotton hard work. Barefooted, and sand, a piece of hot heat, and that walk in the shade and cut and cut off. And when you get laid on cotton that, it's always fun moving the end of the head. You can always let it go, and then you let it go. And now and then you waited your turn. Got mine to dip in your bale of cotton. Put some of this cap to be in the wagon with a great big round section of pipe. Sucking cotton out of the wagon or trailer. And send it all through the can to separate the lint from the seeds, cotton seeds. The seeds go off one can out one direction, and the cotton go off and get compressed and baled and weighed and sample taken. You take the sample to pad and then the cotton powder. And he is great if he looks at it. See how close it was. The grade of it. And offer you a price. For that bale of cotton. You might leave you up on 30 cents a pound for cotton, and you'd be considered a bale of cotton after it was skinned and weighed around 500 pounds or two. Oh, somewhere between 15 and 1600 pounds of picked cotton to make about 500 pound bale of this really $500 bale would bring you about $150. Well, it was a lot of work. The labor was cheap. The cotton required a lot of labor. And land we farmed, it took about 3 acres to make a bale of cotton. Land was pretty much a wood house. Back then, and that land sold for anywhere from $20 to $40 an acre. Today, that same land is ranked as much as $750 an acre. People out of Houston and there's buying
For your recreation, you went packing and fishing.
Yeah. What I like to do. Little Sunday afternoon, get my boys together. We'd have a ball game. We'd go out and cut a little limb off of a tree for a bat.
Want to thank you for making this interview possible.
Yeah.